From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made along the 2,000 miles of land at the U.S.-Mexico border. When many Americans hear mention of a border wall, they may not have an accurate image or an idea of what the border actually looks like. Most will only see a small section of border, either through photos or television news footage, but an award-winning documentary aims to change that. Reporters from the Arizona Republic teamed up to capture the entire expanse of the border. They flew or drove its length, filming remarkable footage of the Rio Grande, of border fences, of desolate deserts, and of canyons and natural walls that would make a man-made barrier in some sections unnecessary. Arizona Republic reporter Daniel Gonzalez told the Democrat and Chronicle that a main goal of the project was, quote, to show people who live in places like Rochester and who have heard all of the sound bites and President Trump talking to see for themselves what the border is like, the challenges of building a wall, and the consequences of that wall. We want them to experience it themselves and draw their own conclusions, end quote. The film, along with related reporting projects, earned the Arizona Republic a Pulitzer Prize. You have a chance to see the documentary The Wall this Thursday at the Little Theater, and this hour we'll preview it with guests who can help us understand the many issues it covers related to a border wall, the economics, the property right laws, the environmental factors, and the human element, of course. And I'd like to welcome our guest. Julie Phillip is Senior Engagement Editor at the Democrat and Chronicle, helping put this together. Julie, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. Glad to be here.
Also with us in studio is Amit Badabial, the Arthur J. Gosnell Professor of Economics at RIT. Amit, welcome back to you.
Hello, Evan.
On the line with us is Daniel Gonzalez, immigration reporter for the Arizona Republic. Daniel, congratulations on the accolades for the work. It's important stuff. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so much.
And with us in studio, hola to Ismael Castellano. He is a member of Alianza Agricola. And Ismael, welcome. Hola. Thank you. Also with us, translating for Ismael, is Noah Mazur. And Noah, thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks
as well.
Thanks for having me.
So this hour, you're going to hear Noah perhaps in the background, because Noah is going to slide over and do some translating for Ismael throughout the hour. And we'll have a chance to have a conversation with Ismael about his experiences as well. I want to start with Daniel on the phone, a jornalista who is with us from the Arizona Republic. And Daniel, why don't you tell us about what this reporting entailed? We talked to one of your colleagues recently here, but why don't you tell us what you experienced, how much time you spent putting together this reporting?
Well, the genesis of the project really started when President Trump came to campaign here in Arizona, and some of our editors attended that rally, and what they came away with is how the chant "Build the Wall" had become a cornerstone of President Trump's campaign. And then after President Trump was elected, our editor Nicole Carroll decided that this should be a project that we should tackle to explain to the American public exactly what it would entail to build a wall, and also to show people what that was like. And the idea was that the cornerstone of this project is that we actually flew the entire length of the 2,000 miles of the border in a helicopter equipped with Hollywood-grade cameras. And what that did was it allowed our reporters to see for themselves what the border looked like, the entire border, and it also allows people who read our series to see the border. You can go to the interactive map of this project and click anywhere on the border and actually fly over as if you're flying over the border themselves, and you can see what it's like.
Daniel, there are so many different aspects of this reporting that could be its own conversation, and I want to be careful not to oversimplify because there are many complex and competing views on the border. But one of the things we see in the first half hour is the number of people who own land on the border, who might otherwise be Trump supporters, who are not happy with the idea of the government either taking their land or appropriating their property. You saw that in a lot of places, didn't you?
Yes, primarily in Texas. And in Arizona and New Mexico, much of the land is owned by the government. Mm-hmm. But in Texas, most of the land that borders the U.S.-Mexico border is owned by private landowners. And what that would mean is the United States would have to seize that property by eminent domain. And that's why a lot of people who live there along the border are not happy about that. That's just, they're people who have lived there for many generations. They've seen the border evolve. they have concerns like everybody else about drug smuggling and migrants coming across the border, but they're concerned about what that would mean for their property. When you look at the border, you can see that much of it is it's separated in Texas by the Rio Grande, and that river undulates greatly in places. So when you build, if you were to build a wall, you'd basically be ceding a chunk of land that's currently, you know, part of the United States over to Mexico, because everything, you can't build the wall, obviously, in Mexico. It would have to be the United States. So all that property on the south side of the wall would basically become part of Mexico.
And then I think as you head west, there was a section, I think, as you get beyond Texas, in which, I don't know how long it goes in terms of physical mileage, but my goodness, the canyons, the dramatic terrain is unlike most of the depictions I see of the border situation. Most of the time we see what you eventually arrive at in Arizona, which is flatter land, desolate desert. But there is some spectacular terrain that almost acts as its own border separation. To me, it seems like there are many stretches where you would not even need to build a wall, because I can't imagine people coming through some of these expanses. Is that sort of a fair reaction to some of that video that I've never seen?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You're talking about the Big Bend National Park,
which is
you know, where you have cliffs that are 1,000 feet high. That the river has over, you know, millennia dug a huge hole there. So you, when you're walking in Mexico, you all of a sudden come to this ledge, and then there's a 1,000-foot drop down below, and then there's the river, and then there's another 1,000-foot ledge on the other side, and that extends, I think, for about 100 miles. So obviously those are areas that, you know, people are not going to choose to cross. And one thing to keep in mind is that drug smugglers and migrants, the areas that they cross is where there's infrastructure. It's not practical to drive way out into very remote areas where there are no roads, there are no towns, there's no way to provide any kind of support for people who are being smuggled into the United States, or drugs that are being smuggled in the United States. So those types, what you're describing is kind of a spectacular illustration of some of the natural barriers that are already exist along the border.
Mm. Julie Phillip from the Democrat and Chronicle, you're helping host this event on Thursday night at the Little Theater. We should warn our listeners, it's already sold out, is that right?
It is. We have had tremendous response to the showing of the wall, and we have a screening after. So what we've decided to do is, you know, we could fill the theater twice right now, I think. So we are working on setting up a second showing. I don't have the details as to when that will be, but we will keep everyone on the waiting list up to date on that.
What do you make of the work that went into the raw journalism that went into this project?
I think it's tremendous. I think it really is indicative of what's going to save local journalism. The AZ Republic worked with a number of other local properties, and they worked with folks here in Rochester. We have Gannett's Innovation Lab located here. And that's a group of people who are very nimble and can help with some of the technical and digital tools that they used. So it just shows that local journalism is not dead. They did a really powerful, powerful piece using multimedia, and I'm really excited for the opportunity to show it to everyone here in Rochester.
Listeners, we'll try to answer your questions as we go throughout this hour. And coming up here, we're going to have a chance to talk to Professor Bhatabiyal about some of the economics and maybe some of the misunderstandings that some of the people in power may have about what happens with migration or how to understand those issues. But before we do that, I want to key in on a section of the film that I think lines up with what, or at least it offers a contrast to what we heard from President Trump just last week. So I want to listen first to, and Rob, we'll listen to the migrant section first from the film. So for this, what you're going to hear is a short clip from the film The Wall. And you're going to hear Chelsea Halstead from the Calabrese Center for Human Rights, as well as Jennifer Vollner, a forensic anthropologist. Now, this is a section of the film in which they're just talking about the way we can lose sight of migrants as human beings. Let's listen.
There's a lot that would prevent migrant deaths, and perhaps where we have to begin in this current political context is seeing migrants as full human beings. nobody's going to care about migrant deaths as long as people don't think of migrants as people.
This individual is female, probably about 20 to 40 years of age. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to find any missing persons that match this case yet. It's not lost on me that this individual could have been a mother at this point. And she most definitely was someone's child. She could have been a sister.
In that scene, they're looking at bones, skeletons, they're human remains, and the people talking are reminding each other, reminding the viewers, that these are people. These aren't just statistics. These are human beings who have been lost to their own families and came north across the border for different reasons. Contrast that with what President Trump said about the asylum program last week. He was speaking to a group of Jewish Republicans, and he was making light of the people who come to the border seeking asylum, implying that all of them are involved in some sort of criminal trade. Let's listen.
And the asylum program is a scam. Some of the roughest people you've ever seen. People that look like they should be fighting for the UFC. They read a little page given by lawyers that are all over the place. You know, lawyers. They tell them what to say. You look at this guy, you say, wow, that's a tough cookie. I am very fearful for my life. I am very worried that I will be accosted. If I am sent back home. No, no. He'll do the accosting. Asylum. Oh, give him asylum. He's afraid. He's afraid. We don't love the fact that he's got tattoos on his face. That's not a good sign. We don't love the fact that he's carrying the flag of Honduras or Guatemala or El Salvador, only to say he's petrified to be in his country. To confront this border crisis, I declared a national emergency.
I want to turn to Daniel Gonzalez, and as I do, I want to praise the Arizona Republic's work on the wall for the breadth of the reporting, because you will see people in the film who talk about essentially the vigilante work that they're doing, trying to apprehend who they view as dangerous individuals crossing the border. The issue I have, Daniel, is not that they're... It's not that there are no dangerous people crossing the border. It's that it seems that when our president talks about it, it's that they are all described that way. How do you see it?
Well, actually, that's the first time I've heard that clip, and it's really, it kind of takes my breath away, because I've traveled with the caravans. I've been to the border in Guatemala and Mexico last year, interviewing migrants who are coming across the border from Central America trying to make it to the United States. I've been here in Phoenix when ICE releases family members who are seeking asylum in our country. And, you know, we as journalists try to take an objective view. That's our job, to be professionals and to seek truth and to tell the truth. But when you see these things in person with your own eyes, the situation, it's heartbreaking. The people who are leaving Central America, is it possible that some of them belong to gangs? Yes, that's possible. But the vast majority of people that I see arriving in the United States seeking asylum are very, very desperate people. They're fleeing very dire conditions in Central America. They're often fleeing conditions of very severe violence, corruption, extortion. And those who aren't directly affected or fleeing the violence are fleeing extreme poverty. They're people who are can't find work, and when they do find work, they're earning $6 a day, is what they've told me. A lot of times, the people that you see are women and dads who have picked one of their children to try to make this journey from Central America all the way to the United States in hopes of seeking refuge and also to improve their lives. Now, it's probably true that the majority of the people who are coming probably don't qualify for asylum. Asylum is a very high threshold. You have to show that you're being persecuted. But there's no question that the people who are coming are very, very desperate people.
Yeah, so listeners, make no mistake. You know, Daniel, and we've talked about asylum on this program in the past. It is a very narrow definition, and most people, even those who are desperate and desperate for a new life and are not involved in any kind of crime or violence, do not technically qualify in this country. That doesn't mean that they are coming across, you know, sort of coached up by lawyers and there as part of a violent drug trade that the president talked about. I'm not saying that's impossible that that could happen, but to caricature it the way the president did, just based on the reporting we see in the wall from the Arizona Republic and other reporting, it's not accurate. Before we turn to Ismail for his story, I want to ask Professor Badabiel. The president in those remarks did go on to also say that he has a message for people coming across the border. He says there is no room anymore in this country. There is no room for you. There is no space for you. And there are no jobs for you. Turn back. So when it comes to the economic reality, here's the president saying, there are no jobs. We don't have jobs for you. Don't come and expect you to get any jobs. There are all kinds of economic questions. I wonder if you can help elucidate some of the issues as you see them in play here, when migration, border issues, and economics.
Right. So it is true that there are several different components to the underlying problem, but we have to separate two kinds of migration. One is the large majority of people who come here for economic reasons, and the arguments anti-migration have traditionally been made against the economic migrants. You know, they displace American workers, they cause job losses, they give rise to lower wages, things of that sort. So that's one part. The other part is what we've seen in the last year and a half to 2 years, people who are not necessarily economic migrants, but who are basically presenting themselves at legal ports of entry and seeking asylum. So these people are sufficiently desperate, or at least a lot of them are sufficiently desperate, that coming here for a job is not their primary motivation. Getting out of whatever country they were resident in, whether it's Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador, whatever, that is their primary motivation. So that's the first distinction that we need to make to understand the nature of the problem as it currently exists. Economic migrants vis-a-vis those who claim, at least on paper, are fleeing persecution of one sort or the other. As for the economic migrants, the best evidence that we have currently on what the implications of the wall are likely to be is to consider a 2006 act. I think it was called the National Fence Act or National Fencing Act, after which about 548 miles of fencing was put up between 2007 and 2010, largely to protect the United States against this kind of rhetoric. But we now have a comprehensive study put out by the prestigious NBER, that's the National Bureau of Economic Research, and the researchers found that the impact of the wall was minuscule. In other words, low-wage American workers and low-wage workers from abroad who were legally working benefited by a very, very small amount, and I think the number was less than a dollar a day, and even Americans with higher education benefited very, very little from the creation of these 548 miles of fencing. So to the extent that the rationale for fencing or construction of a wall is that it's going to protect American citizens, even if we exclude the criminals, rapists, etc., who President Trump loves to talk about, there is virtually no positive impact of such a wall. Contrast that with the costs. The costs are tremendous. So building this 548-mile stretch of border, I believe, cost about $2.3 to $2.4 billion. Okay, and the benefits are minuscule. So from a hard-nosed economic point of view, the first question one wants to ask when confronted with a question about the seeming desirability of a wall is, would this pass a benefit-cost test? Are the benefits at least as big as the costs? And the answer is, A, we don't know, but based on what we do know from what happened in 2006, it is unclear that the benefits will, in fact, be even equal to the costs.
You know, these are good journalists when they have anticipated that question. And Daniel, if I'm remembering from the film, one of your colleagues says specifically that to his understanding, there has not been a sort of a cost-benefits analysis, especially in some of the more remote sections regarding a wall. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, that's correct. Because when we were set out to do the project, we're like, well, if you're going to spend this much money on a project, you'd want to know the you'd want to do a cost-benefit analysis first, and we could find no such cost-benefit analysis or any evidence that it had ever been done.
Okay. And Professor Badabial, are there other things that you think we tend to get confused or mistake often when we talk about the impact of immigration and economics?
Well, if you want to do a very hard-nosed economic analysis and forget about some of the non-economic aspects, such as the rationale being asylum-seeking, then you could make an argument that if you were successful in blocking off large parts of the United States from illegal immigrants, then the people who are most likely to be positively impacted are Native Americans with low levels of education. And if you were to continue to make that argument, then you would eventually say that all of these jobs that are now currently done by migrants, low-wage migrants, illegal or legal, those jobs would eventually be done by Americans, but only after some amount of short-term disruption, which would result in wages rising. So wages would eventually have to rise, otherwise many of these tasks would simply not get done. So you could also make the argument that low-wage American workers or native-born workers would positively benefit if, in fact, we were successful in keeping out all illegal immigrants and all low-wage workers. So the argument is that they actually depress wages, and eventually these people at the lower end of the income distribution would be positively impacted, but of course after some short-term disruption to the economy.
Okay. Listeners, in our second half hour, you will hear Ismael Castellanos' story and his thoughts on this. But before we do that, let me take our first phone call. Bob in Rochester. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Evan, first of all, I'd like to have the professor reevaluate his opinion on how effective walls are, because the ancient Chinese had something to say about that. First of all, you know, sob stories on illegal immigrants, sob. You know what? It is an international George Soros operation to destabilize the Western Hemisphere.
Okay.
Is the bottom line of illegal immigration. And once the Western Hemisphere is destabilized, who goes anywhere? Okay? I am getting so sick of support for illegals, and conservatives don't know anything. And you people are the enlightened ones. America is getting sick of it.
Bob, I'm sort of questioning myself for keeping this call going, but let me at least ask you, because
I'm sure you are, Evan.
No, listen, only because if you want to talk facts, this isn't liberal conservative politics. I get that there are political leaders who take sides based on certain aspects of the arguments, and I think there are a wide range of possible policy outcomes that are totally valid to be discussing. But what I don't understand is, when the Arizona Republic lays out reporting and you call to say, well, that's liberal, I don't understand how reporting extensively in a fact-based way is
one
liberal.
One guy's reporting is yellow journalism to another, tomato, tomato. The other thing is this. You're doing your cost analysis with illegals.
Yeah.
You call up every family who's been murdered and hit in a DWI, and you explain cost analysis.
Okay. So Bob, the last thing I'm going to do with this, I hear you. The number is not zero in terms of how many people have lost family members when people who've crossed the border have committed crimes. I get that. Do you think that there's a higher crime rate among people who cross the border? Because it turns out it's lower. So if the argument...
Yeah, well, put it this way. Evan, when you cross the border, that is the crime. When you come in illegally, that is the crime. So I'm saying it's 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
100% rate of illegals is the crime.
Okay. All right. Just a number in terms of facts here. I mean, I didn't mean to get this into a right-left thing. And I appreciate the phone call as always, Bob. People who cross the border commit crimes at lower rates. And there's obvious reasons why. They'd like to stay here. Is there occasional violence? Yes. Is it the vast majority? No. Is there a valid argument for people who've lost loved ones? I would never take that away from them. But let's move on from that. Thank you, Bob. Unless I'm missing something, Daniel Gonzalez from the Arizona Republic. It's your team that's reported on this extensively. Do you want to respond to any of that?
Well, yeah, because I receive phone calls like that all the time here in Arizona. But one thing I might mention is that walls are effective. They are effective in areas where they have been built. There were a lot of people who used to cross through El Paso and San Diego. Those were the main crossing points in the 1990s. when fencing was built in those areas, the number of people crossing illegally dropped dramatically. But what happened was it funneled people through other parts of the border, and that was primarily Arizona. And then the other thing to point out, so people continue to come. They came in different locations. So that fencing was effective in certain areas. It just moved the problem to different parts of the border. The other thing I wanted to point out is that fencing is not the only technology that we have at the border. So just because there are areas along the border that are not fenced does not mean there's no security there. In the 1990s, there were fewer than 10,000 Border Patrol agents. Now we have over 20,000 Border Patrol agents patrolling the border. We have spent tens of billions of dollars building up border security. In addition to that fencing that the professor mentioned, we have hundreds of underground sensors. We have radar. We have infrared cameras. We have stadium lighting. We have military-grade drones. We have helicopters. We have fixed-wing aircraft. All of those things are patrolling the border. So I think one of the questions that our reporting showed was, is it effective to build 2,000 miles of fencing when we have all of these other technologies available already? And also the other questions that are raised is we've been adding, spending tens of billions of dollars on the border for the last 20 years, and we still have issues with people coming illegally, and most recently the asylum seekers. So it raises questions. Are there other ways to address this issue than only through enforcement and through deterrence? Are there ways, does our immigration system need to be looked at? Are there ways for when our economy is doing well like it is now for people who are needed for those kinds of jobs to come legally rather than illegally? Those are the kinds of questions I think our reporting raised.
All right. Listeners, please find the Arizona Republic's reporting on the wall, this remarkable set of work that earned a Pulitzer Prize and that you can see in a film, well, if you've already got tickets, that is, on Thursday night at the Little Theater, because Julie Philip has been telling us throughout the hour that it's already sold out, but there might be a second showing.
Yeah, I can almost 99.9% guarantee a second showing, and we will have the details. We'll be emailing the people on the waiting list and also publicizing the second showing when we have that nailed down.
Okay. And Professor Badabiel, do you have any evidence that indicates that the economic destabilization of this country or somehow the political destabilization of the country is an immigration plot funded by George Soros? I'm happy to correct the record if I'm wrong. I haven't seen evidence of that.
No, none whatsoever. But this is it's a rather unfortunate argument to make, to bring a Jewish angle to this particular story when there is no Jewish angle whatsoever. And I've heard tropes like that being perpetrated by the likes of Viktor Orban in Hungary, but this is the first I've heard that this is a controversy, or rather a conspiracy sponsored by George Soros and international to destabilize Western democracy. But I suppose it's a free country. People have the right to think whatever they want, including crazy things.
Okay. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and talk to Ismael Castellano. Noah Mazur is here, who is translating with us, and Ismael Castellano is a member of Alianza Agricola, and we're going to talk about his experience and how he views these issues, both at the border with Mexico, but also some related issues here in Western New York. Let's go ahead and take that break, and we're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about Brexit. There is a Friday deadline, and the world is watching, wondering how Brexit is going to go down. Now, Prime Minister May says the UK voted for Brexit, and Brexit must be delivered somehow this week. Can they strike a deal? We've got some panelists who can share their thoughts on what's happening and why, coming up next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we come back to some of your phone calls, let's welcome Ismael Castellanos, who is, I'll ask Ismael to tell his story, and Noah Mazur is here translating. So, Ismael, first, remember, muy cerca to the microphone, there you go. Tell us how long you've been here in Western New York and what your work experience has been.
¿Cuántos años es? Yo tengo 6 años aquí en Nueva York y trabajo en una lechería.
I've been here in Western New York for 6 years, and I work on a dairy farm.
Okay. And what was it that brought you to Western New York?
¿Qué te trajo a Nueva York?
Bueno, lo que a mí me trajo aquí es las la motivación de mejorar la vida de mi familia.
Well, what brought me here was the motivation of building a better life for my family.
Okay, and okay, también.
Y bueno, las oportunidades en México son pocas para las personas jóvenes como yo.
There are limited opportunities in Mexico for young people like me.
Y por eso vine aquí.
And that's why I came here.
Okay. Have you felt comfortable? Have you found enough work to sustain here?
¿Te has sentido cómodo? ¿Has encontrado suficiente trabajo para sostenerte?
Sí. Bueno, como no hay una opción de buscar si estás cómodo, no, solo necesitas trabajar.
Well, there's not much of an option to work, to look if you're comfortable. You just need to work.
Okay. What is the hope for you now? How long do you hope to be here? Do you hope to stay here? And, you know, are you starting to see a vision for your future?
Ahora, como que es tu esperanza, que esperas quedarte en Estados Unidos, que es tu, como miras tu futuro acá?
Bueno, pues, ahora yo me siento como... Bueno, ahora estoy haciendo cosas para mi madre y mis hermanos en México y tengo planes para mi futuro, para ellos y para mí. Pero por el momento no sé qué voy a hacer.
For the moment I'm doing stuff for my I'm working for my mother and my siblings in Mexico and I have a vision of the future for myself, but for the moment
¿Qué dijiste? ¿Qué, por el momento?
Por el momento, ahora no sé qué puedo hacer.
But for now, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Okay. What do you think about the kind of comments that we're seeing from political leaders, President Trump, about what's happening on the border? Do you think President Trump is describing what's happening there accurately?
¿Qué piensas de los comentarios que está haciendo el presidente y los políticos de qué está pasando en la frontera en el sur?
Bueno, yo creo que lo que pasa ahora que el presidente está diciendo lo que muchas personas quieren escuchar.
I think what's happening now is the president is saying what a lot of people want to hear.
Y están buscando razones como fuertes para poder hacer el muro en la frontera sur con México.
And they're looking for strong reasons to build a border on the southern wall, to build a wall on the southern border.
Y la única manera de lograrlo es creando una crisis para poder obtener esto.
And the only way to do it is to manufacture a crisis to be able to get this.
What would happen if President Trump was successful and had a wall built? What do you think the result would be?
Si Trump gana y puede construir el muro, ¿qué va a ser el resultado?
Pues la mayoría de las personas que vienen aquí y están indocumentadas son personas que vienen con una visa y se quedan en este país.
Well, the majority of people who come here and who are undocumented now are people who come with a visa and overstay it.
Como ya no es algo muy común que personas de México quieran venir aquí y cruzando la frontera ilegalmente.
It's not so common that people want to come from Mexico now crossing the border.
Muchas personas lo están haciendo de manera legal porque es más fácil y más barato.
A lot of people are doing it in the legal manner because it's easier and it's cheaper.
Can I ask Daniel Gonzalez to weigh in before we return to Ismael's story on the subject of how many people are crossing the border? The film The Wall and your reporting finds that the numbers have changed, especially if you go back to the year 2000. What's the difference in border crossings now versus about 20 years ago?
Well, when I first moved to Phoenix in late 1999 from Syracuse, New York, what was happening at the border was one of the biggest migrations in the history of the world. There was just tremendous numbers of people who were coming across the border illegally, and most of them were single men from Mexico trying to get leave. There was a poor economy in Mexico, and there was a booming economy in the United States, so they were trying to get two jobs in the United States. And I think in 2000, the Border Patrol apprehended 1.6 million, made 1.6 million apprehensions. And then in 2007, we started to see those numbers drop off. And then when the financial crisis and the housing market collapsed, the number of border crossers plummeted, and that they were down for, and more recently, they've been at levels that we hadn't seen since the 1970s, so about 40-year historic lows. We have seen an increase in the last year in the number of people crossing the border illegally, but it's a very different dynamic. When I was here, came here in the early 2000s, mostly the people who were crossing were single men from Mexico trying to get to the United States. Now it is very, very difficult to cross the border illegally, successfully. There is a very high probability that you will be caught if you try to enter illegally, sneak past the Border Patrol, in other words. The phenomenon that we're seeing now is the arrival of parents with children, and they don't try to sneak past the Border Patrol. What they do is they find areas where there is no fencing, or they try to climb over the fence, and then once they get into the United States, they simply stand there and wait till the Border Patrol arrives and then apprehends them. And because they're seeking asylum, usually they're released in a very short amount of time. So it's a very different dynamic that is taking place along the border now than 20 years ago.
Ismael, what goes through your mind when you hear the president describe people who are seeking asylum as animals, as all of them being violent, dangerous criminals?
¿Qué cruza en tu mente cuando escuchas al presidente hablar de personas buscando asilo como animales y diciendo que son violentos?
Bueno, que en todas partes del mundo, como aquí en Estados Unidos y en todos los países, siempre hay personas buenas y hay personas malas.
Everywhere in the world there's good people and bad people.
Y bueno, como es difícil para las personas, que cualquier persona de nosotros que estamos aquí haría cualquier cosa por ayudar a su familia.
Anyone who's doing something, who's doing anything to get here, would do anything to help their family.
Y creo que ellos son los que, estas personas están haciendo esto para una mejor vida para ellos.
These people are crossing for a better life for themselves and their family.
Y bueno, como las palabras que él dice son ofensivas para todos nosotros, pero como ya está viendo el momento que ya no es como tan fuerte.
¿Cómo no tan fuerte?
Como que ya se está volviendo como algo tan común que no.
The words that he's saying are offensive, obviously, but now they're becoming more common.
Mm-hmm. Well, your work here in Western New York, you're not just working for a farm, you're working for the Alianza Agricola. Tell us what Alianza is and what some of the goals are, Ismael.
Alianza Agricola es un grupo de trabajadores inmigrantes.
Alianza Agrícola, Agricultural Alliance, is a group of immigrant farm workers.
Que estamos luchando para pelear por nuestros derechos.
Who are fighting for our rights.
Bueno, creo que lo que estamos haciendo es como tratar de recibir un poco de lo que nosotros damos a este estado.
What we're trying to do is get back a little bit of what we give to the state.
La mayoría de las personas como yo trabajamos 12 horas diarias.
The majority of people like me work 12 hours a day.
Con un día de descanso por semana o a veces cada dos semanas.
With one day of rest a week or maybe 2 weeks.
Y por el salario mínimo.
For minimum wage.
Y en condiciones que a veces no son las adecuadas para una persona.
And in conditions which sometimes are not adequate for a person.
Y personas americanas piensan que nosotros estamos robando su trabajo.
Americans think that we're stealing their work.
Pero estamos haciendo un trabajo que muchas personas no quieren hacer.
But we're doing work that a lot of people don't want to do.
O tal vez las personas las pueden hacer, pero ellos no van a querer ganar $12 o $11.
Or maybe that they're capable of doing, but not that they would want to do for $12 or $11.
Y si hay personas americanas que lo hacen y tienen, necesitan ganar 15 o de 15 a $20 porque el trabajo es fuerte.
And if there are Americans who want to do it, and want to earn $15 or $20 an hour because it's hard work.
Todas las cosas como los productos de lácteos y las frutas y las verduras.
All of the dairy and fruit products.
Subirían de precio, entonces el costo lo pagarían los mismos americanos.
Would go up in price and the cost would be paid by Americans.
You're nodding over there, Professor Barbiel.
That's exactly right. I mean, this is, I think, what I was pointing out a couple of minutes ago, that if we were by some magic able to prevent the arrival of every low-wage worker from abroad, legal or illegal, it is just not true that many of the tasks that we typically associate with them would not get done. Yes, there would be short-term disruptions in the economy, but like most other economic features, the wages would have to rise. So if you're, for instance, a hotel employee, a hotel manager, and you want people to come and do your housekeeping, and you can't find anybody to do your housekeeping at whatever wage you currently offer, you're going to have to raise the wage. And that's going to be true across the board. So low-wage, native-born Americans are the ones who are likely to be helped most if, in fact, we were able to prevent the arrival from foreign countries of all of these low-wage workers, irrespective of their legal or illegal status.
What do you make of, Professor, the president's recent calls about shutting the entire border? And that's different than building a wall. When he talks right. about closing the border, even Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, has said, don't do this.
Right.
What do you make of that call?
It's a stupid idea, simply put. And you have to trace the evolution of Trump's thinking. So when he was candidate Trump, he repeated this nonsense that he was going to build this magnificent wall and that Mexico was going to pay for it. So the Mexicans have clearly said they don't want any part of the payment associated with this idiotic project. So now, since Mexico is not going to be willing to pay for it, he wants American taxpayers to pay for it. But since we have a Democratic majority in the Congress, he cannot get Congress to sanction the money that he needs to pass the wall. So he, you know, keeps coming up with one antic after the other. Declares a national emergency, wants the military to, you know, divert funds for this or that project. Now talks about closing the southern border, talks about all asylum seekers being animals and things of that sort. So there is no mistaking the simple idea. Closing the southern border would cost a tremendous amount of money, not just the United States, but to trade between the two countries, and it's not clear what the benefits would be.
Well, let me ask Ismael Castellanos then, who's describing the work of Alianza Agricola, the Agricultural Alliance, what specific ideas, what's on the top of your list that you want to see done?
¿Qué hay encima de la lista de cosas que tú quieres ver hecho?
By the government.
In yeah, policy, sure.
In política, por el gobierno. ¿Qué quieres que el gobierno haga?
A nivel nacional o...
Yeah, here in New York State.
Estatal.
Bueno, nosotros ahora estamos luchando por obtener licencias de conducir.
Right now we're fighting for driver's licenses.
Antes del 9-11.
Before 9-11.
Las personas indocumentadas tenían acceso a las licencias de conducir.
Undocumented New Yorkers had access to driver's licenses.
Pero después de esto, todo cambió porque pensaron que las personas inmigrantes eran las personas que iban a causar actos terroristas.
This changed after 9-11 because people were under the impression that immigrants were going to be the ones causing terrorist acts.
Y mucha, como, a nosotros solo estamos como queriendo tener un poco de lo que nosotros aportamos a este estado.
We just want a bit of what we afford to the state.
Ustedes como yo también pago taxas, pago un promedio de $180 por semana.
Like you, I pay taxes. I pay $108 in taxes a week.
Y miles de personas como yo pagamos estos impuestos cada semana.
Thousands of people just like me pay these taxes every week.
Y ese dinero como no regresa para nosotros nunca.
And we never get that money back.
Se queda en este estado.
It stays in the state.
Entonces nosotros no estamos peleando como el dinero, solo queremos tener un poco de comodidad en nuestra vida aquí.
We're not fighting for that money back. We'd like to have some ease in our lives.
El no tener una licencia de conducir nos complica la vida a nosotros.
Lack of driver's license really complicates our lives.
Porque no tenemos como la facilidad de poder ir a la tienda, al doctor o a algún lugar cuando nosotros queremos.
Because we don't have the ability to go to the store or go to the doctor when we want to.
Tenemos que pagar a una persona para que nos lleve a la tienda $30 or $50.
We have to pay someone in the informal economy $30 or $40 just to go to the store.
Y tenemos que esperar a que esta persona esté disponible cuando ella quiere.
And we have to wait until that driver is available to drive when they want to.
Ese es el lado personal.
That's the personal side.
Pero por el lado económico, si nosotros obtuviéramos licencia de conducir,
on the economic side, if we were granted driver's licenses,
millones de dólares se quedarían en el estado porque tendríamos que pagar impuestos por tener un auto,
millions of dollars would be given back to the state because we would have to pay taxes on cars.
Pagar el seguro del carro.
Pay car insurance.
Los dealers de carros tendrían como más clientes.
There would be more clientele for car dealerships.
Las personas que trabajan como los mecánicos.
More money towards mechanics.
Tendrían más trabajo.
They'd have more work.
Y por ejemplo, yo envío dinero para México por semana por tal vez $500 or $400.
For example, I send $400 or $500 a week back to Mexico.
La mitad de este dinero se podría quedar aquí si yo pudiera salir a comprar o a comer a un restaurante.
Half algo. Of that money could stay here if I were able to go to the store or go out to eat at a restaurant or something like that.
Pero como no tengo esta posibilidad, lo tengo que enviar para mi país.
But since I don't have that possibility, that money gets sent back to Mexico.
Okay, you've been hearing from Ismael Castellanos talking about his experience, and I want to let listeners know that on the subject of just driver's licenses alone, we saw a recent conversation on social media between State Senator Rich Funke and a local attorney, Jen Lunsford, who challenged him in the recent election and lost. And they have very different views on this. We've invited both of them, along with others, to join us. We do hope to bring that conversation to you, perhaps in la semana que viene. We'll see. But there will be a lot more to talk about on that issue. I want to take one more phone call before the hour is up. I know Ellen wanted to respond to some of what she heard earlier. This is Ellen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You mentioned that Trump spoke to a Jewish audience, and I just wanted to make the small but important distinction that I'm Jewish. I would never attend that, and that happened to be a very conservative Jewish audience. I just wanted to make that point. And so many of my family and friends came here because of persecution. All my grandparents and my father, and I'm very sympathetic to the immigrants and not sympathetic to Trump's point of view at all.
Okay. Ellen, thank you. And to Ellen's point there, it was a group of Jewish Republicans. I certainly hope didn't imply that that is representative of the viewpoint of all Jewish people. And I appreciate the phone call, Ellen. So one more quick email. Brian says, Evan, your earlier caller mentioned the Great Wall of China and said it was effective. I think we should point out that the goal was to prevent aggression from northern tribes. But the son of Genghis Khan eventually took over and ruled China to create the Yuan Dynasty. The wall was part of a larger effort that also included financial subsidies and trade to temper the risks of aggression. From Brian, we're going in all kinds of directions of history. Professor Badabiel, some final thoughts from you as we think about economic impacts and at least keeping our eyes on what is factual, not what is right or left politically, but
right.
what is accurate.
Right. So one key thing to remember is that the nature of migration that we see from Central America and Mexico today is rather different from what it was even 30 or 40 years ago. Second, it's very, very important to remember that a lot of these people who are coming today are presenting themselves at legal points of entry. They're not trying to sneak in illegally. So they are trying to escape persecution, a very, very impoverished state of life, gang activity, things of that sort. And that's why they're escaping or trying to escape. That's the second thing to keep in mind. Third is there is definitely an economic aspect to this story. There's no question about that. But we don't know whether to make any sense of it because we haven't done any significant cost-benefit analysis to justify what Trump is seeking to do. And finally, the point that sometimes gets lost, I think, is it's important to remember that the plight of some of these people is definitely not envious. There's no question about that. The rather sorry circumstances in which they're coming from. But at the same time, we are a nation of laws. So for instance, just because you're poor is not a grounds for seeking asylum in this particular country.
In this case, that's right.
Okay, because there's
that's
poverty.
That's what the law says, yes.
Exactly, and because there's poverty in many different countries of the world, and if poverty were grounds for seeking asylum, we would have people from India, Pakistan, the Philippines, all kinds of many African countries who would also in principle be legitimate claimants to asylum. Seemingly, for instance, you know, when Jeff Sessions said, domestic violence is not a grounds for asylum, seeking asylum. He was criticized rather strenuously by a lot of left-leaning folks. I happen to agree with that. I mean, just as I find Trump's comments reprehensible, I don't think domestic violence in and of itself is grounds for asylum, because domestic violence exists in many different countries. So if that were grounds, then our consulates and embassies would be getting swamped with requests to seek asylum from all parts of the world. All and right. These are some of the things that we need to keep in mind.
Yeah, complicated issues. And I want to thank, especially I want to thank Daniel Gonzalez from the Arizona Republic. Tremendous work on not only the film, but the reporting series, The Wall. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time for the hour, and thank you for the outstanding journalism.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate that. Professor Badabia, always good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Julie Philip, it's sold out on Thursday night, but if there is a second screening, we'll try to let you know on various platforms.
We will, and we will email everyone on the wait list.
Thank you very much. To Noah Mazur, who's translated, and to Ismael Castellanos, thank you. Nice meeting you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. All right, more connections coming up.